I sip my beer on the show?
Fuck yeah.
Oh, okay, cool.
You can do whatever you want. Whatever you want to do, you can do, Brian Lindsay.
That's right. Let's go.
We're live. Well, we're not live, but we're on. That's the start of the show. This is how I start the
show. I suck down my beer.
Drinking a beer. Yeah.
Yeah, welcome. Yeah. Welcome. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, man, thanks for doing this. This is absolutely. I'm excited. There's just the pre-show alone was fun to talk about. We are joined today by Brian Lindsay, or Witch Up Brian Lindsay, I should say, founder of Tough Enough.
Well, I wouldn't call me the
founder. All right.
I'm a partner. So the founder
boss.
Was
you're really
was
the boss. Barry.
The founder was the iconic Barry Meyer.
Oh, right. That's right.
So Barry was the founder. He was really the pioneer of amateur MMA. And if you know the story about Tough Enough, I mean, some of the biggest names on the planet, you know, flowed through this organization. And, you know, we lost Barry a few years back, and his little brother Jeff and his dad and his family took the reins of the organization, and they kept his legacy alive. And it's been freaking amazing.
Yeah.
You know, I became a part of the organization in 2013, and we've just been growing it ever since, outside the pandemic, which was a fucking disaster.
Disaster, right?
But yeah, we're getting ready to do our second fight back since the pandemic. So,
wow. Yeah, I went before the pandemic, I think maybe in 2019, Green Valley Ranch. I went to two different fights over there outside. We were talking before we started rolling, and I loved it. It was great, man.
Yeah, fight MMA under the stars, you know, out there in that backyard at GVR is just, I mean, in my opinion, I don't think there's a better setting in town for a fight.
It's so good.
You know, and you know, you're so close to the action at Tough Enough events. I mean, literally, you hear every punch and every kick, and you know, everybody's getting blood on them, right? I mean, that's Tough Enough about, right? And you know, these kids are fighting for their lives, you know, and they're looking to get a big boy contract and, you know, jump to the UFC or Bellator or PSL, whatever it is, or PFL,
PFL.
And so, you know, it's just fun. Green Valley, that venue is amazing.
Is it fun being like a launching pad for the future stars in many ways?
Yeah, I mean, that's our tagline, right? I mean, we're the springboard basically for the future stars of MMA. So, you know, and that was Barry's vision from the beginning, you know, is to create this organization to allow these athletes a platform to get fights under their belt and, you know, see what it's like to do the walk and get in the cage and get hit and get kicked and be a part of the game, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the Ronda Rouseys of the world, Chris Holdsworth. I mean, the list goes on and on and on about who's come through the organization. So yeah, I mean it's super fun.
Yeah,
super fun.
And now I saw you have a fight an event coming up May 20th.
May 20th at Cox Pavilion.
That's exciting. And am I late to the party? And have you always had some pro fights on the card, or is that a new thing?
And so we always wanted to be a pro organization, but you know, living in Las Vegas and competing with the UFC is just stupid.
Right.
So I mean, we're not dumb entrepreneurs. Right. So, you know, we've done pro fights historically, and during the pandemic, Jeff and I started working really closely with the guys at the UFC. And I've known, obviously, in the early days of the UFC, working for Frank and Lorenzo for 20 plus years.
Yep.
I know those guys really well. And we negotiated a deal with UFC Fight Pass, but under one condition, that our fights were pro and not AMI. So,
interesting.
So now we're doing undercard amateur fights, and we're doing pro main card fights.
Okay.
And so now the AMI show is on BN Sports Network, and it's north of 280 million homes. So huge distribution for that. And it's killing it on the network. They love it. We just re-upped that deal. And then we signed a deal with UFC Fight Pass. And so now we're, you know, worldwide in 60 countries on UFC Fight Pass. And this is our second show with an undercard that's AMI and a pro main.
Got
it. Second show back since the pandemic too. We shut it down.
Yeah.
Right. You know, the restrictions that the Nevada State Athletic Commission put on amateur fights during the pandemic was bananas.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, UFC was the only organization in the world that could afford to do it.
Right. I was just saying, they have the money to
lock them down.
Whatever happened.
Yeah. You're locking down athletes for 2 weeks. I mean, our fighters have jobs and they have kids and families. I mean, most of them aren't even getting paid.
Oh, it's going to be so frustrating.
Yeah. It was nuts.
Yeah. Well, welcome back.
Well, yeah. This is our second fight back. The first fight was off the rails.
Was it?
Was so much fun, yeah. And so for us to be, you know, back in a great venue, we love Cox Pavilion. They're so good to us as we grow. And you know, we did that fight downtown with Derek Stevens at Circa.
Right.
You know, and it's so cool to walk into the Circa Sportsbook and see your fight you know, on that screen. Sure. I mean, there's no better sports book on the planet, you know, than being over there. So yeah, it was awesome, man.
Yeah, Derek has really changed. I mean, downtown, I mean, just that one property. I mean, the D is cool, you know. Circa is another level. I mean, that place is amazing. Great energy. It kind of reminds me of the Hard Rock from back in the day in terms of the vibe when you want the energy when you walk in there.
Yeah, no, the vibe's great. I mean, obviously being a casino guy my whole life,
right?
You know, I'm pretty critical about that type of vibe. But you're right. I mean, it's got good energy. The demographics are off the charts. The sports energy is nuts. The music is so freaking loud, though, you can barely hear straight.
Right.
But you know, that's what they're looking for. Right. They want to drive the energy. And, you know, I think that, you know, we were looking for a long-term partnership with them. Before the Circa ever opened, we did live fights down at the D in the outdoor venue.
Okay.
And so we've done, you know, a bunch of different events down there. So we love downtown. I mean, it's just, it's so iconic and it's great for locals. I mean, we're a local fight company. We have local athletes on our card. We have 20 local athletes on our card on May 20th.
Wow.
20.
Yeah, I saw my buddy Maki Patolo, who was in the UFC, is fighting on the card on May 20th. I know George Carmona's got a buddy. What's your buddy's name? Give your buddy a
Guillermo Prieto.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. What weight class is he?
He's going to be a light heavy, like 190, I believe.
Okay.
In the way, what would that be? What would that
well,
be?
Or 185, maybe? Or
somewhere around there.
Are your weight classes the same as UFC?
We do our best to keep him as close as we can. But look, if we've got two guys that are, you know, that we'll do a catch weight.
Sure.
Out, you know?
Yeah.
But we like to keep them as close as we can.
Yeah.
Just sort of, you know, parity.
How many events do you have planned for this year? Or do we know yet?
Yeah, we usually do an event every 6 to 8 weeks.
Okay.
So you're going to see a steady diet of us. And, you know, this isn't the only market that we're focused on.
You know,
we've done a fight all the way in Turning Stone Resort in upstate New York.
Really?
Yeah, we sold out a 5,000 seat event. We partnered with Combate America.
Okay.
So we did a fight up there, sold it out, 5,000 seat venue. So we're going to bounce all over the country. You know, that's our goal.
What are your thoughts when you see, you know, Dana White takes a lot of heat for fighter pay. It's always something that everyone's seems to pick on him. They don't seem to pick on Bellator or any of the other promotions that I probably don't put. Well, I mean, sure, it's maybe some, it just depends, right? Some fighters probably make more for Bellator because they're kind of the franchise, right? Sure. But I'm sure it's all very competitive. Like, do you think Dana gets treated unfairly when it comes to that, or do you think the fighters are right? What's your take?
You know, obviously, I'm always pro athlete,
right?
I mean, as an athlete growing up, as a wrestler, you know, I wrestled Greco and freestyle my whole life, so I'm always pro athlete.
Mm-hmm.
Do I think the UFC fighters can be paid more? Hell, fucking yeah, they can be paid more. But look, at the end of the day, you know, as Dana says all the time, this is a freaking business.
Right.
And, you know, he's got investors and it's public and, you know, they've got responsibilities and obligations. And look, I mean, I worked for the Fertittas for 20 plus years in a publicly traded entity.
Yeah.
And, you know, you got to be fiscally responsible and, you know, you got to do what's right for the business. While simultaneously, I mean, there's a lot of athletes making a ton of money.
For sure.
There really is, right? The majority, you know, we see them every day. They're coming up through our organization. You know, but what is crazy though is some of our amateur athletes are making more as an amateur athlete with their sponsorships, fighting for us, than they do their first 3 to 5 fights at the UFC.
I believe it.
Because they're taking, you know, if they're maybe they get an 4-4 deal to show up for the UFC. I mean, some of our guys are making 8, 10, 12 grand because they get to keep all their sponsorships. We don't take a penny out of their pocket.
Wow.
Nothing. So, and we can't, the Athletic Commission doesn't allow us to pay the amateur athletes. So, you know, so we let them keep all their sponsorship. And so, I mean, you get guys that get 20, 30 sponsors out there, they're making $100 to $500 a pop.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's great. And it's great for the sport too, because it's tough, you know, when they're coming up and they're trying to pay for training and nutritionists and do, you know, some of them obviously can't afford to do everything.
That's right.
And so it's great to have organizations like that.
You know, to provide them a platform to be able to do this is super rewarding.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I wish I was 10 years younger. I mean, Randy Couture obviously is my age, right?
Yep.
And you know, he's a freak of nature, right?
Yeah.
Obviously. I mean, there's no other guy like Randy.
Yeah.
And I've shared the wrestling mat with Randy over the years, and he's done clinics for me for my youth wrestling organization I have here in town. But I mean, had I been 10 years younger, I would have fought for sure. You know, I have that little.
You have the switch. You're a little off. Yeah,
it gets a little off. I get a little impulsive and I like to smash things every once in a while. So I would have totally fought, but you know, I just got married. I just had two kids, and so it's like, you know, it's just my, you know, in those days my kids were babies, and my wife's like, no way, you're not gonna fight.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was. I mean, I would have done it in 2 seconds.
Yeah.
You know, so it was really cool to grow up you know, when Frank and Lorenzo bought the UFC, everybody was like, what the hell? You know, and Frank Fertitta's, Lorenzo and Frank's dad, you know, was like, what are you guys doing?
Right.
You know, why are you doing this?
Right.
You know, and then when the Ultimate Fighter hit, they were kind of like,
Maybe you're onto something.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was fun to be a part of that from the early days.
Probably the best success story ever, sports-wise, right? Maybe sure. one just ever, period. Yeah. I mean, that's to go from what they, 2 or 3 million they originally, or 5 million? A
couple million bucks.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I think they put 15 or something into it, whatever, more. Okay.
Yeah.
Even if it's 50 million into it, I mean, 4+ billion.
Yep.
On the way out,
who knows what it's worth?
Yeah,
I think it's north of $8 or $9 billion.
Right,
you know,
right.
But yeah, I mean, in the early days, it was a grind. I mean, there's no joke. I mean, it was a lot of hard work, and you know, for Lorenzo to walk away from the casino business, which is the family empire,
sure,
to go build the UFC, where everybody's like, no way, he's going to do that full time.
Yeah,
and then you know, it just exploded.
Yeah, you know? And I think Dana tells a great story where like Lorenzo comes to him one night and he's like, you know what? See what you can get for it. Just sell it.
Yep.
You know, let's get out. And then the next morning,
there's probably a dozen of those conversations. Right.
Yeah. Like the next morning, he's like, "Did you call anyone?" He's like, "No, not yet." He's like, "Fuck it, let's just do it." Like, that is just the coolest.
What's even cooler is, rest his soul. But the former president of Station Casinos, Scott, when Scott passed away in a tragic accident a few summers ago.
Mm-hmm.
It was the day I bumped into him in T-Bones, the steakhouse, because I was still the president at Red Rock in those days. I bumped into Scott in the steakhouse at T-Bones at Red Rock, and he said, "Yeah, we sold the UFC." And I'm like, "What?" He goes, "Yeah, the deal's done. It's funding today. Frank and Lorenzo are going to be here any minute." I'm like, "Holy shit!"
Wow.
And that was the day. Yeah, I mean, it was epic. I mean, it was, everybody was so excited. And
yeah,
you know, but there, you know, it's so much hard work that nobody sees. You know, nobody sees all the grinding and the, you know, the early work and the, you know, filling up the Mandalay Bay Event Center when Tito was fighting.
Yeah,
you know, Chuck and all those
fight.
Yeah, I mean, it's just
like '01 maybe, or right after 9/11, right?
Yeah, and we would, you know, we'd get stacks of tickets, you know, the ones would run around and give all the food and beverage directors and the VPs.
Isn't that crazy? I mean, you think of how far it's come in really a short amount of time.
Yeah, we would literally fill the arena by 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and half of them were team members,
right?
Just to, you know, so we'll look full on TV and people would go, "Whoa, this thing's really catching on," right?
Right.
But it's genius marketing. I mean, Frank and Lorenzo are so good.
Yeah.
I mean, they're the best that I've ever seen. You know, they do the same in the casino business.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I learned the insides and the ins and outs of that business too. And it's, you know, they're just passionate about everything they do.
You
know,
do you miss the casino business?
I do. I miss it a lot.
Do you?
I do.
Oh, wow. I didn't think you were going to say that.
No, I do. You know, I miss the energy of it. I miss the guys. I miss having a big ass team. I mean, she had thousands and thousands of employees over there.
Right.
And our team members, we call them at stations. But
yep.
But yeah, I know I miss it a ton. You know, am I sad I'm gone? No. I mean, we took the company public and it was, everybody, you know, did really well.
Yep.
And so now I'm just an entrepreneur. So I just, you know, I spend time doing Tough Enough and I've got, you know, half a dozen other companies that I grind on. And
would you ever go back to the casino business or no?
No.
Open your own?
There's some things in the works.
Ah,
I'll just say that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but I won't run the day to day, but I'll put a partner on some projects
that
involve gaming. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's no better profit margins than that.
Right. It's crazy.
Vegas wasn't
business,
built on
right?
winners.
Yeah. 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 I built a couple wings around town.
That's right.
Yeah. 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 Cosmo has a lot to thank me for. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Well, if you know Macbeth, he's going to walk away with a pretty penny over there.
Yeah. I heard he's leaving soon, right?
I think MGM's taking over operations.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So, no, it's good. Good for him. Bill's a great dude.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
do you gamble too or no?
No.
Sports betting, nothing?
I'll bet some sports, right? I bet the Golden Knights every once in a while.
Okay.
You know, I bet some of the NBA playoffs, but I just tinker just for the heck of it, just to make it fun. College basketball and college football are fun for me. But yeah.
Is MMA like your number one sport fan wise?
I mean, I'm season ticket holder at the Raiders. You know, I got 50 yard line seats over there. And so I take friends and family and stuff to the games. But I was never a Raiders fan. I was a 49ers fan when I was a kid. And then, when I moved to San Diego, I became a Chargers fan when Junior Seau was there.
Yeah,
and
sure.
All, you know, that was,
sure.
You know, Fouts and all those guys were there.
Yep.
But yeah, now I'm a Raiders fan, so got to support the home team.
And baseball's like watching paint dry for you, I'm imagining. I knew you were going to say that. You were almost really cool in my eyes, Brian, you know, until then. It's okay. I will get past it.
No, it's cool, though. You know, I got a really funny story about baseball.
Yeah?
So before 24-hour fitness in Vegas crashed, I used to go to 24-hour fitness all the time. I would take my dad and we'd go work out. and I'm in the back doing a bench press. And this guy comes up and he's got a Muscle Farm t-shirt on.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, you know, we were doing Muscle Farm and MMA Elite in the early days of the UFC. We had a couple brands that we were working on. And this guy's wearing a Muscle Farm t-shirt. And I'm like, how do you know about Muscle Farm? He's like, oh, my son's a baseball player here in town. I'm like, oh, really? He goes, yeah, he just signed his first big deal. And I was like, what's his name? He's like, you might have heard of him, Bryce Harper. And his dad was like spotting me on the bench press over at 24 Hour Fitness on Sunset and Green Valley Parkway.
Wow.
So
Bryce cool. did okay, I guess.
Yeah, he's doing all right.
So
I love watching those guys. But you know, I'll watch probably the World Series, but I couldn't watch it.
That's it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Season tickets. If we get a team, we're going to get a team, right? Sure. Are we getting a team? You probably know.
I'm
unofficially, of course.
I'm pretty sure we're getting a team.
Okay.
Yeah. And there's a few more pro teams right behind that one from
really?
The scuttlebutt on the street. Yeah. Yeah.
Like basketball or?
Basketball, soccer.
Really?
Yep. Yeah. A lot of great conversations going on around town right now.
Which means a lot of great traffic on the way at some point, but it's okay.
Well, you know, they're redoing that Tropicana interchange right there, which is, they just awarded that contract. It was like a $300-400 million deal to redo that interchange.
Right.
So I think it'll help. I mean, it'll help the Allegiant Stadium and you know everything that's going on down there. But
Where'd you grow up?
So I was born in Phoenix, but my parents divorced when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And then my mom remarried a professor from ASU. So I moved every 3 years.
Mm.
Went from Phoenix to Michigan State when he was at MSU. We went to Penn State for a little while. And then he got transferred to San Jose State when I was in like seventh grade.
Mm-hmm.
And so seventh and eighth grade and part of ninth, well, I was in San Jose. That's where I met my wrestling coach of my life, Rudy Guevara, who's a Puerto Rican Olympic coach and U.S. Wrestler. Went to Gonzales High School, stud wrestler. So he was my head coach, and we got to be super good friends, and he just mentored me through my whole career. And my parents took a job at the University of Hawaii, and so they moved. And I was on my way to the Junior World Championships in Te Awamutu, New Zealand.
Wow.
So I flew to New Zealand after my freshman year of high school, and my parents were at UH, and I spent the summer there. I was going to stay. And that Kaiser High School is where I started high school when I was there. And then they dropped the wrestling program.
Oh, man.
And so I called up my coach and called up my best friend, Jason Schroeder. We're still best friends to this day since we were in sixth grade. And Jason said, dude, if you want to move back to Vegas, my mom, Zach, and Kathy Schroeder would you know, allow you to live with us. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me.
Huh.
So I got a job, saved up a bunch of money, bought my own ticket, moved back to San Jose and wrestled there. So I spent the majority of my career in San Jose.
Wow.
So then started wrestling freestyle and all that stuff and won a national title and flew all over the world and wrestled. And yeah, it was awesome. So that's why I see DC over here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
See, I've done a bunch of stuff with DC. When the UFC Fan Expo, if you remember those.
Of course, sure.
So we, through Lorenzo and the whole organization, the UFC, we created a wrestling organization called the Ultimate Alliance.
Okay.
And so it was a few national wrestling organizations, New Way up in Michigan and the National High School Coaches Association and me. And we did the wrestling tournaments inside of the UFC Fan Expo for years. And DC wrestled his last match on a mat inside of the Ultimate Alliance UFC Fan Expo. He wrestled.
I didn't know that.
Yep. He wrestled. And he put his, he had the cage fighter, red, white, and blue custom shoes. And he took his shoes off and left them in the middle of the mat.
Right? Oh, sweet.
Yeah, it was amazing.
I was just in Phoenix last Saturday at the fight.
When they announced he got the Hall of Fame?
Yeah, in the Hall of Fame, he was balling him.
Yeah,
it was
that
a cool
was
moment.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Good for him.
Legend.
Dude, he deserves every minute of that, man.
And he's a great commentator.
Oh, he's so good.
Yeah, he's so good.
So good.
Yeah.
He's amazing. And he knows every angle in every sport, and he's just so passionate about supporting athletes and what he's doing. So Gilroy, where mm-hmm. he coaches,
yep.
is my rival.
Oh.
So Gilroy and Santa Teresa, where I went to high school, we hated each other. And so this kid, Luke Corona, who I wrestled from Gilroy, he's a badass kid. He was actually a year younger than me. He and I would go back to back to back to back every year. And my senior year, Luke and I both made it to the finals in the Central Coast section, the state meet. And so we went toe to toe in the state meet. I beat him, but it was a freaking gnarly match. And now that's where DC spends all his time down there is with those kids at Gilroy. And they are a monster. They're a powerhouse. I mean, Gilroy is insane.
Wrestling keeps proving time and time again to be the best base in MMA. I mean, it's undeniable.
Undeniable.
Right?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I think people say, oh, it's boring and oh, they're just going to hug and grab each other, blah, blah, blah. But at the end of the day, you know, their ability to, you know, just the mindset of the wrestlers is really where it gets them, right? I mean, look at Chandler over the weekend.
Yeah, he's a beast. He's monster. So much fun to watch.
Yeah. You know, and he's calling out Connor and all the stupid shit he does. But I mean, look, he's a monster.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, he's a kick-ass wrestler.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Do you go to fights ever?
All the time.
Yeah, you still go?
Yeah, all the time. Yeah, yeah.
And you
watch? Reed Harris is a good buddy of mine.
Yeah, I just saw Reed. Yeah, and we were on the same flight home on Saturday or Sunday. Yeah, yeah. I like Reed. He's a good guy.
Dude, he's amazing. Yeah. And he and I, in the early days, we would do all the UFC, the fight parties at the Green Valley and Red Rock and all that stuff. And so, Reed and I go to lunch, you know, every, you know, month or two and, you know, catch up and, you know, keep in touch on everything. So, yeah, no, Reed's amazing.
Fights, have you been to a fight at the Apex? I'm sure you have.
Yeah, a couple times.
Yeah, yeah. They're so good in there, right?
Yeah. It's kind of like watching a Tough Enough fight.
100%, I agree.
Yeah, I mean, you're right there in the action. And there's, you know, I mean, obviously, there's only, 150 people there at the most. But,
yeah,
super cool.
Obviously, it's exciting when you go to a fight at T-Mobile. But when you go to, like, a Tough Enough event, especially like the ones I've been to, the only ones I've been to are at Green Valley.
Yeah.
And outside there. And like you said, you hear the carnage. Oh, yeah. I mean, you really, you know, it's easy to get swallowed up in the excitement at T-Mobile Arena with all the people and the fans, but you don't hear the fight like you do at your events or at the Apex.
You're
it is
up
a
close.
Different, you really respect it more. I think it's like everyone needs to go see a fight like that, you know?
Yeah, the no hold bar, I mean, those are just insane. Like, you're hitting the hits and the punches, and, you know, you're sitting in a Tough Enough fight. I mean, the worst seat is 50 rows from the cage.
Right.
I mean, so you're seeing and hearing everything. The ringside seats, I mean, you're in there.
Yeah, and there's a different magic when they're fighting on the way up, right? When they're trying to get to the UFC or
there's
a Bellator
no stalling,
or whatever.
There's nothing. They are just going at it.
It's just proving that you got it. There's no feeling out process. There's no measuring. There's no. They just get after it.
They do. Yeah. It's awesome.
So good.
Yeah.
How did you first meet Lorenzo? How did you get hooked up with them to begin with?
So, long story short, I was in San Diego. I was working for a guy by the name of Robert Earl in the 90s after college. Yeah. So, Robert was a themed restaurant guy, right? So, I worked for him 95, 96, and 97. And we opened up Planet Hollywood restaurants all over the world.
Right.
And so we opened up, you know, internationally and domestically.
Yeah.
And then I was transferring all over the country at that time. I opened up the Phoenix location, which was like our 7th or 8th store. Then I went to Chicago. Then I went to Dallas and spent some time in New York, opened up overseas locations. And then my last stop was at Horton Plaza in San Diego, down in the Gaslamp District, where the new Padres Stadium is.
Yep.
I would go to a Padres game, by the way.
Okay, fair enough. So, all right.
If you want to go back to baseball.
Okay.
So you've
redeemed yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was working for Planet at the time, and it was killing it in those days.
Yeah,
I
mean, oh my God, because you had Stallone and Bruce Willis, right? It was like, I mean, that's all you needed.
I've got a photo album that is iconic.
Really?
Of me with hair, you know, before I was bald. And I mean, I've got pictures of me with Bruce Willis and Stallone and Schwarzenegger. Wow. And I mean, you name it. Every major celebrity that came through one of those stores, I was doing a presentation with them and giving them a cheesy Planet Hollywood leather jacket.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. So I had a jacket.
You did?
Yeah, for 100%. I had a jacket.
That's awesome. Yeah, I probably got like 80 of those things.
Yeah.
I donate them to Goodwill now. But anyway, so I was at the Planet Hollywood in Horton Plaza, San Diego, and my buddy and I were actually going to a Charger game. Mm-hmm. And we stopped at Mission Center Road on the red trolley that takes you from downtown all the way to the Qualcomm at the time.
Yep.
And I'm like, dude, you see that sign over? Let's go grab a beer. There's a Gordon Beers right here. So we walked up and we didn't know it wasn't even open yet, right? So we walk up to the window, I'm looking in, and so we're knocking on the door. And there's a bunch of guys sitting around looking at like some plans, and it was obviously visibly under construction, dust everywhere. So I'm knocking on the door. Guy comes over to the door and he answers it. He's like, hey, are you looking for a general manager or anybody on your management team? I said, I run the Planet Hollywood downtown. I'm, you know, would be interested in working for Gordon Beers. It's a San Jose based company and blah, blah, blah. So long story short, that guy that opened the door, his name was James LaFlamme. James LaFlamme was the general manager of the Gordon Beers in Mission Valley. And he literally hired me on the spot.
Wow.
Like, I spent hours there flipping through the plans. Frank and Lorenzo were there, you know, going through the design, all that stuff. I had no idea who they were.
Right.
No idea who they were.
Well, most people probably didn't back then either,
they were still
flying
Southwest in those days.
Wow.
They didn't have the fleet like they have now.
Right.
Right? They're still, literally, we would pick them up at the San Diego airport. They were flying Southwest. And so I gave my notice the next morning, and then that started my career with working with the Fertittas. And so we built Gordon Biersch into a massive national brewing company. Yeah. Dan Gordon on the beer side, Dean Biersch on the food side. And, I mean, it was just a...
Now, was Tillman involved in those two back...
No.
He always did his own thing.
It was his own thing, okay. Yeah. So, yeah, he's... I mean, obviously, he's got 800 restaurants.
Sure,
He's doing pretty well.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, they kept it separate.
Okay.
And then...
They had some casinos at the time, though.
They had Boulder Station, Palace Station, and I think Sunset was being built.
Okay.
I think it opened in 96, so Sunset was being built. And then they had Texas back in those days. So the four, wow. Those four assets, yeah. And then I joined, after we sold Gordon Biersch to Big River Brewing Company in Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Yep.
And then I left Gordon Biersch, and Lorenzo called and said, hey, we're building the management team at Stations. You got to move to Vegas. I'm like, done.
What is that like when you get a call like that, like from someone like,
dude, it was,
like
it was,
a Lorenzo?
And I had just met my girlfriend, and we were, you know, getting pretty serious. And I'm like, oh, God. You know, and so I got the call and I said, man, I got to go to Vegas. And she's like, right. What? Moving to Vegas?
Yeah.
And I said,
it's a good rule not to tell billionaires no. You know, it's a rule that I have. Yeah. You know, I don't know about other people, but
you know, what's classic is that I called my mom to tell my mom. I said, Mom, I got this great job offer. I'm moving to Vegas. And she goes, oh, Brian. So much sin in that town. I said, I know. I said, don't worry, Mom. I got a good head on my shoulders. I won't get sucked into all that. But yeah, and I've been here. I mean, I thought I was going to be here like 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
And I've been here since 99.
Wow. Can you imagine living anywhere else, or you love it here?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
I mean, I think I'll always keep a house here just for tax purposes. But yeah, and I have a little place in Maui that we go to. And,
okay.
You know, just... yeah, but I could easily live somewhere else, but I'd always come back to Vegas.
Yeah.
You know, my daughters were born and raised here.
Right.
You know, badass daughters, by the way.
Yeah. How old are they now?
So my oldest is 19. She just graduated high school.
Oh, wow.
And my youngest is finishing her junior year.
Okay.
So they're competitive cheerleaders. They're on the California All-Stars. Actually, Dana White's daughter is on the California
All-Stars really?
Team. Yeah. And so the girls, my daughters were, I think, collectively 5-time summit world champions. And then... I think they won like 22 or 23 national titles with the California All-Stars. So the California All-Stars is right over here off of Sunset and Green Valley Parkway around there.
Okay.
And so they've got, you know, a couple thousand kids, you know, that cycle through that gym every year.
Yeah.
And they win, you know, multiple, you know, world titles out of that gym. And so my kids grew up in that environment and, you know, they're just killing it. So it's been super fun.
What are some of the other things you're into? What other businesses do you have going on?
So I've got a really cool air company called Environ Safety.
Okay.
So that was kind of pushed up during the pandemic.
Yep.
So it's, you know, long story short, it's we licensed a technology that's made here in the USA where they take a rare earth mineral compound, they wrap it around a UV light, and then they encapsulate it in stainless steel, and we put it up inside of every air conditioning system, and it inoculates any viral activity in the air and on surfaces.
How did you get into that?
A buddy of mine
just pitched you.
A buddy of mine called me and said, hey, do you think we can get this stuff into casinos? Cause we can get a license for it.
I'm like, yeah.
So now we're in restaurants. We're in every Chipotle worldwide. 2,600 Chipotles. The system is, every TGI Friday. We just installed here locally at Roseman University. We're getting ready to do Toro University. So a lot of school systems are using our systems to, you know, clean the air and, you know, reduce COVID transmission. It kills COVID on contact 99.9% of the time. So that business is off the rails. We're doing it domestically, and then we're down in South America. So that's been super fun to grow. We've got a CEO over there that just kills it. And, you know, I spend a couple of days a week playing with that.
Yep.
And then obviously Tough Enough, I spend, you know, some time with Jeff, my partner Jeff, on that.
Yeah.
And then my latest project is actually with my former boss from Gordon Biersch, James LaFlamme. It's called Earth Vision. And we have a patented manufacturing process where we take agricultural waste like corn, wheat, rice, pea starch, any starch-based material, and we blend it through with hemp. Mm-hmm. And through this patented cooking process, we cook it and then press it into food service materials.
Wow.
So, you know, bowls, clamshells, pizza boxes, you name it, right? So we're standing that company up right now, and I brought James in to be my chief operating officer, and so he's running operations worldwide, and we do insulation in residential homes. We do all kinds of crazy stuff.
Yeah.
So that company's super fun. And I have a consulting business, you know, so I consult for gaming companies here locally. Mm-hmm. Wynn Resorts, one of my biggest clients. And so Craig Billings, the CEO over there, and Matt Maddox called me when they heard I'd left stations. And so I worked with them and designed their loyalty program in Boston, and we brought the loyalty program here to Vegas. And so a great group. And yeah, so just stay busy.
Yeah.
Got a few things going on.
Do you have lots of people pitching you ideas like nonstop once you've cashed out on something and people know, or your friends know, like, oh, you had some wins.
I've invested in a dozen companies.
Yeah.
I've invested in a data science company that does a bunch of really cool medical testing called ChromoCare. Mm-hmm. So they have a patented testing process to help physicians fight this opioid epidemic.
Yep.
And so these physicians will send patients out to get our test. It's called the GAP test. And that test tells the physician what medications that particular patient should or should not take based on their DNA.
Hmm.
So that company is obviously with telemedicine and all the things that have been going on during the pandemic, that company's doing great. I've just been, just venturing out into a bunch of different really cool, fun venues. And you know, my buddy Ben Carey and Brian Hopkins and I, have a really cool, fun auto project over with our buddy Corey Thomas right by the stadium.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got three studios in this building, and then we build kick-ass custom 50s, 60s, 70s muscle car, American muscle cars.
Very cool.
Yeah, so that they rebuilt the Cobra, the 427 Cobra that I bought from Ben Carey.
Yeah.
And we rebuilt it there, and now it's just a beast. It's just nasty.
And when did you say your new casino's opening? When did you say?
No, I don't. You're not going
to
get that.
See, I was trying to see. Like how I did that? That was good, right? I thought I had you. No, it was. I thought that was a good. No, you got to get up early to trip you up. Damn, yeah, I thought I had him. I thought
not,
I had you
that's
on that.
That's not happening, man.
All right, I tried.
Some of them are already open. So.
Oh, okay.
So that's all right.
And outside of Vegas, obviously.
No.
Damn. All right. He's not talking. All right.
It's all about timing, man.
Okay. I love it.
Yeah, it's all about timing.
Is there anything you haven't done yet that you want to do? Like,
I want to travel more. That's my, I just want to travel more.
Yeah.
Spend more time with my kids and, get out and relax a little more. You know, I have a CEO mastermind group on Tuesday and Wednesday once a month that I get to mentor a bunch of CEOs here in town. And we were talking today about stress relief and how
that's funny. That was my next question. Was going to say, you don't strike me as anyone that has stress. Like I was actually going to ask you.
Stress is relative, right? I mean, I just do everything I can to keep in a positive mindset and focus on the things that I control and things I can't. And so I didn't tell him there's 16 of them in the CEO group today. I didn't tell him what we were doing. But I opened up and showed him a video about, how stress is so bad on your health and this and that. And everybody was like, oh, yeah, I know a guy that, had cancer and, he stressed himself to death. So I rented an SUV from AWG.
Yep.
My buddy over at Alan Waxer.
Yep.
Yeah,
yep.
He's a good dude.
Yeah.
And I threw him in the SUV and we went down to that Range 702 place.
Yeah.
And we shot AK-47s.
Love it.
I shot keep in mind, I've never shot a gun before in my life.
What?
Today was the first time I've ever shot a
Wait,
gun.
Wait, whoa. Literally today.
First time I've ever shot a gun in my life.
Wow. Are you going to tell me you shot the Desert Eagle? Is that what you shot?
That's exactly what I shot. That was my first gun.
Oh my God. That's the first thing you shot?
Scared the shit.
Dude.
I had no idea how violent that thing was.
Power. I mean, it can knock you out. I mean, it can literally kick back and knock you in the head.
That's what I was expecting.
Yeah.
It literally blew my earphones off. I mean,
yeah.
It was off the rails. I looked back and I was like, I mean, the whole place just shook.
Right.
And I think I had a 50. Oh. I think I had the first shell.
Oh, there it is. Here it comes. It's gone. It's in the car.
Damn, I thought I had the
it's
shell
in the ashtray.
Damn, it's in the, I must have taken it out.
It's all right.
I had the first shell because it flew over my head.
Right.
And my buddy Joe D threw it in my pocket.
Yeah. That gun is violent.
Dude, I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
And then I shot a 50 cal, shotgun.
Yeah.
Dude.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. And then a machine gun, all kinds of stuff, right? So everybody got to shoot guns. And I mean, there's ladies in there, too. I mean, you got some powerful women.
Oh, there's some badass.
Oh,
there's a girl here that does her podcast. It's called the Dating Intelligence Podcast. and her name's Jamie Villamore.
Oh, okay.
And she's a drop-dead gorgeous blonde, and she's a competitive shooter, sponsored by knife companies. Yeah, she's just an all-around badass.
I thought you were going to say Tracy Lee for a second.
Oh, no, I know Tracy Lee, though. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
She's always out there shooting.
Tracy Lee Guns. Yeah, yep, she's got her gun Instagram. Tracy, I always say, is the hardest working girl I know.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
And now she's doing all the NFT stuff.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, Tracy used to, I mean, before she got into all the other stuff, she was one of the original photographers that I met
Napkin
in the
Nights.
Early days. Yep.
Yep.
All the Napkin Night stuff. And she'd come to all of our fights and all that.
Yeah.
And actually, it's funny. The closest I ever, the most time I actually spent with Tracy was when Uriah Faber, myself, and Sam Hahn.
I love Sam Hahn.
We launched an art company together called Optical Panacea.
Yep.
And okay. So we used to do these autograph signings, and we'd fly in Luke Rockhold and Showtime.
That was like 2013 or...
Yeah,
I remember.
Yeah. So I was partners in that.
Okay.
Tracy would come to all the events, and she'd shoot all the pics and all that kind of stuff. But those were the fun days, man.
Yeah. How is Sam? I haven't talked to Sam in a long time.
Oh, he's killing it.
Did he move out of Vegas?
No, he still lives in Vegas.
Okay.
Yeah. No, he does all my videos and stuff. Like my Environ Safety, the air company video.
Talented guy.
He did all that for me.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's incredible. I mean, he's got so much equipment in his house now. I mean, he's got one of those red movie cameras.
Yeah.
I mean, they're six-figure cameras.
Yeah.
And he can literally shoot a movie.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's a stud.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's cool, you know, Sam.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, small world.
I'm blown away that today was the first day you ever shot a gun.
I know, right? I'm shocked.
So you'll be back. You will go back.
Oh, for sure.
And next step is ownership, for sure. Or no? Are you a...
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously, growing up,
kids,
I had two young daughters, right? So I just stayed away from it.
Yeah, I get it.
I don't want to have guns in the house with two young girls, right?
Right.
But I mean, I'm obviously a freedom loving patriot. So,
yeah.
You know, I believe in guns and, I just never really did it.
Yeah.
Right? A lot of members of my family, my cousin Kyle's got like 50 of them.
So,
I think I'll probably pick up a couple things.
I remember when I was in, I went to UNLV from LA originally, and I would have friends come and visit, and we used to go to a gun range on Tropicana. I forgot what it was called, and we would shoot an Uzi. We couldn't believe you could shoot like a fully automatic gun.
Yeah.
When I was, you know, 18, and would shoot sporadically once every few years. Someone would say, "Hey, let's go to the range," whatever. And it wasn't until 2020, when the world ended, that I was like, "Oh God, you know, we gotta get, you know, can't even get toilet paper. You better have a gun because they're coming. Yeah. They're coming for your toilet paper."
Apocalypse.
Yes. So I went and overreacted and got a gun, and we started. My girlfriend and I, we both bought guns. And we started going to the range. It's really addicting, man.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah, my buddy that brought all his guns and stuff to the... He's in the CEO group today. He brought all his guns. His name's Tim Dieters. Big developer here in town.
Mm-hmm.
And he walked in with... It's like the dude that brings his bowling ball to the Red Rock Lanes. To
John
go
Wick.
Yeah, he walks in with three bags of freaking full of guns and ammo and all this stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And he's... I mean, he's got... You know, shit, he had a 357 Magnum. He had what's the one up for the 44, I guess?
44,
he had a 44.
Then he had a 45.
Maybe it was a 45.
Yep.
And he had a machine gun and all kinds of stuff. And
yeah.
So, he went at the end and everybody was shooting all his stuff. So,
yeah.
Yeah. It was cool.
It's fun.
Yeah, it was super fun.
Everybody liked it, obviously.
Oh, they loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's cool. Obviously, I always, you know, because I'm the coach of the group, right? So we always tie it back to life. Of, you know, how does this apply to what you do every day with your focus and this, your ability to catch when you're getting ready to go sideways something mentally, and how do you, you know, get back to center? And, you know, so we tied it into everyday life and running their businesses and things like that. So yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah. Are you an early riser?
I don't sleep much. So yeah, I usually go to bed, you know, sometime between 11 and 1, and then I'm usually up and at them by 6:30, 7. Not too early.
With an alarm, or you just get up?
No, I usually set an alarm. I get up every morning. My youngest is still in high school.
Okay.
So I love to get up in the morning and see her before she goes. So I make her smoothie and, you know, make her lunch and get to see her before she runs out the door.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how stressful is having two daughters?
I thought it was going to be way worse.
Really?
Oh, my kids are unbelievable. I mean, I hear these horror stories about parents. It's like, you know, oh, when your kid's a teenager, you know, all that shit.
Right.
My kids are unbelievable. I mean, they're super disciplined.
That's great.
They're really focused. I give all that credit because when my wife and I found out that we were pregnant,
mm-hmm.
I'm like, you need to stay home. She was working at Bally's in Paris. She was a convention services manager working 80 hours a week. I was working for stations working 80 hours a week. We saw each other in the night, basically.
Wow.
And so when we got pregnant with our oldest daughter, I said, this is it. So she literally stopped working on July 2nd or 3rd, and our daughter was born on July 4th.
Oh, wow.
And she's hasn't worked since.
Yeah.
She's raised
definitely makes a difference.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, parenting is everything, for sure.
It's the best, most important job in the world. So.
Yeah.
And yeah, she's obviously still there.
And when they were dating, or when they started dating, it's not doesn't freak you out? Do you have talks with the guy when they come over? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you have some talks?
We've had some talks. Yeah, we've definitely had some talks. You know, some of these, you know, but the good thing is the girls have been great about, you know, judge a character.
Right.
And, you know, but there's been a couple of knuckleheads that they've had to kick to the curb.
Mm-hmm.
So my oldest has found her sweetheart. So they're super happy and he's killing it. He's in the solar industry. He's just 19 years old and he's murdering it.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you know, it's one thing I've noticed since opening this studio, we opened a year ago. I call them kids just because I'm old, you know, everyone here that works, like George here is 23. What are you? 23?
23.
Yeah. So everyone's like 23 years old.
Yeah.
They're 23 compared to my 23. Yeah. It is light years apart. Yeah. Have you experienced this?
We were still
this?
Chasing chicks in those.
I was fucking up on all possible roads, just a complete degenerate all the way to 30, if I'm being honest.
Right.
It's not like that anymore.
No. I think there's pockets of that everywhere.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I think you surround yourself with good kids and good parents, and you know they're going to find each other.
Right? Yeah.
And so you know, they've got great judgment, and they've had great kids in their life. You know, my youngest daughter was dating the number one ranked youth baseball player in the state for a little while. But
the good sport. Yeah.
Yeah. but that's all he did. I mean, he was on like four teams. He's on the Dodgers development team and some other stuff. And Jack Gillian, I think Gillian's his last name.
Okay.
Tough kid. I think he just already signed a full ride to Long Beach State.
Wow.
But they're not dating anymore. So she's just, you know, she's going to go through her senior year as a varsity cheerleader and do her thing. And my oldest, in the middle of the pandemic, mind you.
Yep.
You know, she's got the mindset. She's got the, you know.
Yep.
And so in the middle of the pandemic, she's like, Dad, I'm not doing cheer anymore. And some guy at the gym wants me to be a bodybuilder. And I go, yeah, right. I go, what guy at the gym? And she's like, no, really. He's old like you. And I'm like, okay. So I'm like, all right. I said, well, we'll set up an appointment. I want to meet this guy.
Okay.
Right? So long story short, she sets up an appointment. This guy's like convincing her to be a bodybuilder during the pandemic.
Right.
And so we set up this appointment. We go down to LVAC on Eastern and Green Valley Parkway.
Yep.
And I walk in and there's this gigantic bodybuilder. His name's Mark Byers, IFBB Pro, or whatever. I think it's IBF, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Pro bodybuilder, gigantic dude, my age. Went to Independence High School in San Jose, competed with me and Gilroy and Santa Teresa. And he literally is my age. We graduated the same year.
Okay.
And he's like, yeah, he goes, your daughter is in incredible shape. I see her here every day. And my wife is also a fitness physique competitor.
Mm-hmm.
And all these girls that are out there training every day are all competing in a show coming up in March. And she's already in better shape than them. And I haven't even helped her yet. And I'm like, well, if she wants to do it, then let's go. And so she worked with Mark every day for 12 weeks. And she shredded and just got jacked.
Wow.
And she went from like 128 to 111 and just... You know, and she won her first show. She won every division she entered. She won the novice division. She won the true novice division. And she won the open division in her first show ever.
That's amazing.
Insane, right? Yeah. And I'm literally sitting in the audience going, is this really happening?
Yeah.
And then, you know, she's got the dance and all that from growing up as a little kid.
Sure.
And the stage presence and everything.
Yeah. So
literally.
That's the hardest piece, I think. Right. I mean, obviously, all of it's difficult. But that's the tough piece is the show piece is the posing and
the sassiness and all that stuff. And she just murdered it.
I bet.
And so she won all three divisions. And so... So she's, you know, and outside of that, she's got an online clothing company that she's building and, you know. She's doing pretty good. She just bought herself a Range Rover, Velar.
Oh, fancy like
whatever.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever. Yeah. So she's doing all right.
You're a car guy too, though.
I am. Like it's in cars. The blood. My whole family.
How many cars do you have? Oh, boy.
Yeah. No, I'm a car guy. That's for sure.
Yeah.
I'm for sure.
Do you ever go out on the track?
I haven't taken my cars out there, but, I've done a charity thing out there, where I took my Benz out there to V12. So it scoots, took that out there,
yeah,
ripped around for charity, but never, you know.
What's your favorite car you've ever owned?
Oh, the Shelby Cobra for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, that's been, I mean, that's, I think that's every guy's.
That's iconic.
Dream, I mean, car on the, yeah, planet, right?
Yeah.
So yes, and that I had to put a lift in my garage though, because I didn't have enough room. So I put a lift.
Wow.
I put a lift in my garage and I put the Benz underneath and I put the Cobra up top.
That's sick.
So it's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
And my wife loves it. Yeah.
Yeah.
She's like, there's no more room.
Right.
There's no more room. So I go, oh, there's plenty. I can put three more lifts on that side. We got plenty of room.
Plenty.
But you know, my buddy Brian Hopkins, you know, he calls me every other week and he's like, dude, you got to see this Harley down at Red Rock Harley. So during the pandemic, I think I bought, I don't know, three bikes from him during the pandemic. So that's my other addiction is Harleys.
Yeah.
But you know, just look, life's too short, man.
Yeah.
You know, I worked my ass off for 20 plus years.
Yep.
And you know, I'm going to play. So,
yeah,
you know, work hard, play hard. I mean, it's kind of cliche and stupid, but you know, it's part of life.
What, is there a casino story? We have a lot of people that love following the show for gambling stories, poker winning stories, blackjack stories, card counting, whatever. Is there anything that sticks out that you can? I know there's probably stuff you can't talk about. Is there anything that you could share, like a good story from back in the day?
I mean, I've seen a lot of guys in the MMA world that you and I both know really well get their ass kicked, and I've seen them kick our ass. So
it
goes both ways. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's been some really long late nights, you know, sitting in my office on surveillance going, if he wins another hand at 250 grand a head, I'm going to die.
Really?
But you know, look, it typically if they have the discipline to stay with it, if they're in the hole,
yeah,
they can usually come back. But oftentimes they just blow their brains out and just play all night and lose the whole credit line. But
yeah,
I've seen some cool stuff, but yeah, I don't want to talk about anybody specific.
Right.
But.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. What's the most you've ever seen someone win in a night?
Probably 5.5-6 million.
Wow.
Nothing too crazy. On the strip, it goes way bigger than that.
Really?
Yeah. But in the locals market, I mean, you don't really get, you know, super crazy.
And when someone wins like 5 million, what are they betting a hand? Is it like 100 grand a hand or
depends on the skill level of the player.
Yeah.
Right. So you kind of rank them. You know, there's like an internal ranking system on, you know, how they play, how many hands they want to play, how fast they play, you know, their skill level. So we score them, you know, and we through surveillance, we watch them. You know?
When guys do come in and want to play that kind of money, they have to set it up ahead of time, right?
Oh, for sure.
So they come in, and is it like a negotiation? Like, hey, I want to be able to play X amount of hands, and this is the...
Yeah, so there's a central credit system that the gaming industry uses. And so we can pull up, you know, anybody that's a significant level player.
Yeah.
We can pull up, you know, their central credit, and it shows every casino on the planet that they have a line at, how much they took out, how much they played, what their average bet was, you know, how fast they play. You know, there's another system.
When you say how fast they play, you mean in decision time?
Yeah, hands per hour.
Take a...
Yeah, hands per minute or hands per hour.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Because there's some guys that go slow, that take their time.
Yeah, they're methodical.
Really?
And yeah, and so we watch the fast and the slow.
Man, I need rapid fire. I need rhythm.
Most people do.
Yeah.
They want to keep it. Yeah, they want to hit it and go.
Yeah,
hit it and
I get mad when dealers aren't like, I like those quick dealers that are, I hate when some of those dealers like, they're so slow. Sometimes they can't even get it out of, well, these guys are probably playing double deck, the guys you're talking about, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, like out of the shoe, I'm weird. I actually like the shoe more than double deck. It's probably... Yeah. I just, because of rhythm, I don't want shuffle. I just want.
Yeah, the breaks oftentimes, they'll jack your rhythm up. Yeah.
I'm all for the continuous shuffle that everyone says don't ever play.
Yeah, I mean, typically I don't want to get into casino odds and all that stuff, but you know, there's a bunch of different methodologies.
Yeah.
And, you know, some players are they only want to play single deck.
Right.
Because they're.
I can't even imagine that.
Oh, I know.
It seems like a fucking nightmare.
Shuffling every 8 minutes.
Right.
Right. Depending on how fast they're playing.
Right.
But, yeah. I mean, typically we'll run a player down. We'll see, decide, and based on, you know, how much you played and how much you lost or how much you won, here's what we're willing to give you. And, you know, obviously some of the big boy, you know, operations on the strip, like at Wynn and Bellagio and Venetian, I mean, their limits are much higher than what typically happens in the locals market. But you know, those players lose down there too, and they want to change their luck and they want to come play in the locals market. So, you know, we typically wouldn't give them as high of a limit, as they would get on the strip, but yeah,
cause
we'd
like
go big.
On a night where one of the local casinos loses, like let's say a couple million, does that hurt? Does that actually hurt them, or do they not really feel that?
I mean, depending on the property.
Got it.
You know,
at Circus, there's a problem.
At a Red Rock or a GVR, you know, look, at the end of the day, if it's not a just hit and run type situation,
right?
At the end of the day, they're going to get another visitor too, and they'll come back eventually. But yeah, I mean, some of those smaller properties, you know, typically they wouldn't be allowing those level of limits anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, it's volatile. There's volatility.
And you never played. You never went down that road.
No, I mean, I transitioned out.
Very rare, I feel.
Yeah. I mean, I transitioned out of F&B in 2006, before we opened Red Rock. And then that's when I started marching my way up on the executive gaming and gaming side in stations. Got my first GM job probably in 2009. And then just bounced all over town, you know. Frank and Lorenzo like to have fresh set of eyes mm-hmm. on every building. And so they would move. I mean, I've worked at Green Valley twice, Red Rock three times, corporate, in the early days, Fiesta Henderson, Boulder Station two or three times, Santa Fe on the other side of town. I mean, I've worked all over town. So, you know, you're coming in and fresh set of eyes and, you know, working on driving the business.
Red Rock is one of my favorite properties in town, hands down, and GBR.
I opened up both.
Great.
Yeah, they are. I think they're
iconic. Wow, you opened up Green Valley. Wow,
that was the first property I opened when I came to town.
When they had Whiskey Sky?
Yeah, Whiskey Beach. Yeah, Randy Gerber and Cindy Crawford.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, those were the days. Our food and beverage director in those days, Dawn LaGuardia, I don't know if you ever remember her.
I do.
Really?
Sure.
Yeah, so real sweet, blonde, just a go-getter, you know. She ran that whole operation over at Green Valley. And we had the TV show back in the day, if you remember that. I think it was called American Casino.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, so we had a live. It was really one of the first gaming reality shows that there ever was.
Okay,
and it was at Green Valley Ranch.
Wow.
Yeah, and so you know, the executive team was filmed in every restaurant they went or in every event they went to, and we had, you know, Lorenzo was big in entertainment back in those days, and we had the Black Eyed Peas come outside and play at the pool.
I remember that,
which was pretty cool.
I absolutely remember that.
Yeah. So so that was all part of the opening plan and all that. So yeah, it was fun.
Does it shock you how much Vegas has changed over the years and how like it blows me away how like they keep building and they're able to fill these places up? Like when I think of the MSG Sphere, like a few years ago, I was like, how is this going to work? Like
I still don't know how it's going to work.
Right.
I mean, it really is amazing to me when you think about the volume of traffic. I mean, you look at the traffic counts. We've had 13 months, I believe, now in record gaming month after month after month. After
right.
Month. I mean, obviously a lot of that's, you know, federally insulated.
Yeah.
But that's my word of the week.
That's nice. I like that. I'm stealing that.
Yeah.
That's good.
But, you know, look, it really is amazing to me when you think about the volume that comes through this town. And I travel. I mean, I probably travel 20,000 miles a month, right? Just all over the country and internationally.
Still.
Yeah.
Really?
And it was so nice. I flew through the whole pandemic. I mean, it was so nice. Half the planes were empty.
Airports are great. Yeah,
it was
too.
Unbelievable.
It was great.
And now it's a shit show now. I mean, you got to get this, even with TSA and clear and all that stuff, you still got to get there super early now.
Yep.
But I mean, it really is. I mean, we're so resilient when it comes to, you know, grinding through all this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and we talked about the economic impact of what's going on with the war and all that stuff today in my Boar Mastermind group. And, you know, we're seeing a little bit of slowness in real estate and things like that. But, you know, the top real estate guys in the city is in that group, Joe DiRaffaele.
Yeah.
And he's saying, look, the prices are coming, you know, are slowing down a little. And there's not 25 offers on every house. There's like 6 to 8.
Right.
But, you know, it is what it is. Like people are still buying houses, and Californians are still,
still coming
in with cash, right?
Yeah.
And then Tim Dieter's on the commercial side. I mean, he's got 8,000 apartments between here, Arizona, Utah, and SoCal, and he's got 800 million under development. So,
wow.
I mean, there's no slow in the multifamily side either. So you never know, but you know, we talked about too, you got to be prepared. You know, you never know. I mean, there's with all the craziness that's going on, like, you know, save some cash and, you know, be prepared for if something were to go sideways and, you know, the next 12 to 18 months, don't get caught flat footed.
Right. Right. So. Okay. So May 20th, big fight.
Yeah.
You'll be there, I assume.
Oh, for sure.
I'm coming.
Oh, come sit next to me.
I'm coming. All right,
yeah.
Done.
Yeah,
like, I invited myself to that, yeah. George. You know, no, I invited myself. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I'd love to. I would love to.
Cox Pavilion, it's one of our favorites.
Tickets here. Like, I haven't bought tickets yet. I didn't think this opportunity would arise, but maybe we can chat afterwards.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really exciting, man.
Yeah, it'll be our second show back from the pandemic.
Yeah.
Obviously, we shut everything down. And,
yeah.
You know, we kept everybody working through the pandemic. We're working on the UFC deal and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So, but it's just awesome to be back. And, you know, our sponsor is every one of our companies that sponsors the fights are all local companies. You know, Tyrone over at Las Vegas Lighting and Ben Lurie from Neck and Back Clinics. I mean, the list goes on and on and on and on. And they were so fired up to be back and you know, in face-to-face and, you know, get to see this all come back.
The UFC and Dana, obviously, I feel like they really get it. They really understand the importance of promotions like yours and the feeders, right? They understand that it's important to get them, you know, and not view them as competition. You know, it's one thing where the MMA community as a whole, I think, does a great job that boxing has never really done. I mean, boxing's just, no one's really figured that out.
Yeah, you know? No, I would agree. I mean, I think, you know, obviously our platform being the local amateur, I mean, we essentially are kind of like the farm league for the UFC, right? I mean,
right.
You know, unofficial.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, Dana comes to the fights. I mean, he comes down at the D and he'll sit with us and, you know, we'll evaluate as Shelby comes down and, you know, they're looking at athletes. I mean, there's two words I got for you, Ronda Rousey.
Yeah.
You know, she fought for us and they snagged her. Right?
Yeah.
And she literally created a global industry. And we gave her start.
And she fought for you at a time where Dana was adamant, never women, never.
Yeah.
And literally started that whole thing because of her.
Yeah. That was Barry Meyer's vision.
Mm.
I mean, the founder of Tough Enough. I mean, he always knew that was going to be, you know, a huge opportunity. I mean, look what's happening in my youth wrestling organization. I got a kindergartner last week in Texas that just won her first national title and she's in kindergarten.
Yeah, so, that's funny. That was the next question I was going to ask you is, you've seen the sport evolve, right? It's not just guys that are just standing and throwing. Like, you've seen now, you know, because a lot of people, you know, 25 years ago, the first crop, right, of MMA fighters, they were so new to the sport, they didn't grow up doing it, right? Oh, yeah. These were really athletic guys that either maybe they boxed as younger or wrestled. And then, but now you're seeing people that are starting to learn all these different disciplines when they're 3, 4, 5 years old.
Yeah, it's
by the time they get to 15, 16, 17, 18, 20, they are legit.
Oh yeah. Freaks of nature.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's incredible to see this next generation coming up is unbelievable. I mean, it really is. I mean, when you got kids that have been in a disciplined environment, you know, both on and off the mat, I mean, their mindset is just light years from the generation before them.
You know?
So it's, I think that, I mean, the sport's going to continue to grow. The international acclaim is continuing to shock people. You know, during the pandemic, obviously, you know, Dana took a super aggressive approach.
Yeah.
And Dana, he never, just like Frank Lorenzo, they never take no for an answer. Like, you figure it out.
Yeah.
You fucking figure it out.
Yeah.
You know, that's what you do. And it's, you know, it's win no matter what. So that's what Dana did. And, you know, I mean, look what happened.
Yeah.
I mean, their social media just skyrocketed. Their revenue skyrocketed.
Yep. One of the best years they ever had was last year.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine that.
Bananas. Yeah. Bananas.
Well, man, I'm really excited to come to the show. Thank you so much for doing this today.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we need to do this again for sure. This
no
should
doubt.
Be a, you know, we're going to get you to a Dodger game, though. I think we need to get you to a Dodger game. No, like a little Dodgers, maybe a Dodger Yankee.
I don't think I can name one Dodger.
Come on.
Maybe the dude with the big red beard. I don't know his
Justin
name.
Turner?
Yeah.
Okay. Can you name any other baseball player besides Bryce Harper that's currently playing? Oh my God, you're killing me, Brian. You're killing me. Well, at least you're true. You know who you are. Yeah, All right.
Honestly, like, not one name. Pete Rose.
Okay, but he's retired, but it's good. I'll take it. At least, you name a legend. It's okay.
Yeah, I don't know. I actually met
Shane
Pete.
Victorino's a fight fan. Do you remember Shane?
Oh, I know Victor, Shane.
He played for the Phillies. Yeah, you might know him. He lives in town.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. He's super good friends with Stacey Alonzo, the former chief marketing officer at Stations. She owns Noah's Animal Shelter.
Oh.
So they're in the parking lot over at Shade Tree. And so when women are in battered situations,
yeah.
She helps them escape and they can bring their pets. And
oh.
Because so, a lot of times women are in those situations, they stay because
they don't know what to do with the pets.
They don't know what to do with their pets. And
oh,
so
wow.
Stacy created Noah's. It's named after her son.
Yeah.
And she's Shane is one of their biggest contributors. And
oh, so, that's cool.
Yeah. Now Stacy has a location here in Vegas and she's got one in Reno. And so she left at stations around the same time as me. And
got it.
And so she's up there with her husband as a gaming attorney. And so she's got a new company up there that does like, I forget what it's called. I think it's called Bonito.
Okay.
Follow him on Instagram.
Bonito. Okay.
And so she focuses on her passion, which is animals and yeah. helping women get out of, you know, horrible situations
yeah.
from dickhead.
It's crazy how many
assholes.
Of those dickheads there are, right?
Way too many.
It's shocking to me.
Way too many.
Yeah. So. And how many people get stuck in that type of situation. We do every year a 24-hour live show for some reason.
Oh, wow.
24 hours live of Action Junkies. This is, you know, no one, an hour is enough for everyone. I dump 24 hours in everybody once a year. And this year we raised some money. To help victims of sex trafficking
and
domestic
violence. I would love
to
be a part of that in the
yeah,
future.
Yeah, man.
That'd
would
be
love
amazing.
It. Yeah.
yeah. I'm on the board for Boys and Girls Club, so we do a bunch of stuff with the charitable stuff here in town. And
yeah.
Stacy's, you know, super involved in a lot of that stuff. So that'd be amazing. Love to be a part of that.
Cool, man. Well, Brian, thank you so much for coming on
for
today.
Me.
Yeah,
appreciate
this was
it,
a good time.
Yeah.
All right, awesome. Gang. We'll see you next week. George, I don't know how you normally end the show, but just do whatever it is you do.
I'll do it. Something
do
a little
something
bit like the logo
that,
swiping now.
There you go.